And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
And welcome! I hope you enjoyed the live stream. If you happen to have watched it, it was a lot, but it was fun. Had some really great comments in the chat. But today, we are shrinking down to a different world. We are going forth into the zone within the zone. We are going to shrink down to the molecular level as we look at the world's greatest grandma. I mean Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Come on, it's the best Father's Day movie that we're not reviewing on Father's Day.
Because he's the world's greatest grandma. I don't know. I think there's an official Grandparents Day. I don't really know what it is. I'm sure our negative 92 listeners will let us know what it is. But at this point, he's just the world's greatest grandma. But let us talk about where we last saw our little aunt friend. Scott Lang was in a prison. He was in prison on the raft because he helped Captain America in Germany.
War.
So I'm sure that won't be brought up at all. You know, I'm sure that's not relevant. So we open actually on a flashback, and we see this is the last moment when Hope saw her mom, played by Michelle Pfeiffer, as her and Hank are leaving on a trip, and it's a very cute little moment. We have a rehash of Janet's alleged death, where she shrunk between the molecules or whatever. So in case you don't remember what happened, Janet allegedly died in the quantum realm, but. And then Little Hope gets the bad news. Hank thinks now we're in the present, and Hank thinks Janet is still alive. And he has to bring her back. So this is about almost 2 years after the events of Civil War. Because Scott, meanwhile, has been on house arrest. Fun times. We see Scott in a tunnel with the greatest character in the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe, Cassie Lang, as she tells him that she eats fear for breakfast. So this is a very cute father-daughter moment as they're off on an adventure. We actually see thereafter, like, some trophies, like this very Indiana Jones-esque, like, very cool-looking adventure thing that he did for Cassie. We see that it's all made out of cardboard. And he took elements from his previous adventure as Ant-Man, where there's like a fake ant that is leading the way to the treasure. It's very, very cute. So the treasure at the end of the tunnel is a little statue that says World's Greatest Grandma. And Cassie wants to bring it for show and tell, but Scott says that it's a very, very sacred trophy. It is the greatest present Cassie has ever given him, and it cannot leave the apartment. So Luis runs in on business, and then I guess Luis and the other gang have formed this like security consulting firm, which is really cool, called X-Cons. And so Scott, as we find out, is actually on house arrest. And there's a cool scene where they slide down the house on the outside of the staircase. But unfortunately, Scott's leg flies through the fence, so the FBI shows up. We also find out that Scott has 3 days left and that he has learned close-up magic at the Close-Up Magic University. And Cassie is very protective of her dad and is the legitimately smartest person in the room. She actually asks the FBI agent, whose name I can't remember, but he basically says something along the lines of, like, because your daddy did a naughty thing with Captain America. And she just looks at him like, I'm not three. You can't talk to me that way. She's like, my dad did nothing wrong. And I'm like, yes, you are right, Cassie. Scott did nothing wrong. So let's see. So the FBI agent asks him if he's spoken with Hope and Hank because they are also wanted, even though the logic behind why they're wanted is kind of iffy because yes, technically they developed the technology, but one could argue that Scott stole that technology. So technically they did nothing wrong. But they also went on the run, so it's awkward, I guess. But Scott tells them that as part of his deal, he couldn't have any contact with Hope and Hank. And Cassie adds that they hate him. So he's been on house arrest for 2 years. and he has 3 years probation now. And if he violates the house arrest or the 3 years probation afterwards, he will get 20 years in prison. They hate his guts. Sorry, that's still about Hank and Hope. They really hate his guts. Maggie and Paxton actually side with Scott, and I love them in this movie. You see kind of, I think, how far the character, their relationship has come. Because anytime Maggie's in the room, she's like, you can't be doing this. And Paxton, because he's a cop, says, well, actually, yes, they can. She's like, this is wrong. I like Maggie. And I cannot say that about her counterpart from the comics, because I actually hate Cassie's mom. So I'm glad this version of her mother did not make me hate her. Scott finds ways to pass the time as, you know, Paxton and Maggie take Cassie home. Let's see. So he finds ways to entertain himself. He plays video games. He takes very long bubble baths because he's a nerd. But then at one point he's in the bathtub and he has a dream of the quantum realm. And he sees a little girl playing hide and seek and she hides in this wardrobe. So Scott has a secret, you know, burner phone stashed away and he calls Hank. So tiny universe, he's bitten by a mosquito allegedly, and then he wakes up in Hope's car, and it's a tiny car, and Scott's like, no, you gotta get me home, I'm on house arrest, and he tries to apologize, but like, Cap needed me, and Hope's like, oh, Cap needed you, you're my partner kind of a thing. So they have a new lab where the ants are helping build a quantum tunnel. And they had powered it up, right after it blew, they called, Scott called. So Scott says that he destroyed the suit, and like he was with the Avengers and blah, 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 but he says he destroyed the suit. Oh yeah, I'm sure he destroyed it. Mm-hmm. So they talk about the hide and seek moment, and she says, well, this little girl, did this wardrobe have like horses on it or something? He's like, yeah. And then Hope's like, oh, that's where I always hid. And Scott just kind of looks at her like, I don't think you know how to play hide and seek. But this confirms that Janet is indeed alive, but they need to see a man about a part. His name is Sonny Birch. He is annoying as all hell.
But he's played by Walter Goggins, who is a good actor.
And he's real annoying in this role. He plays annoying really well. So they need the part for the machine so that they can get a message from Janet out of Scott, because they think that Janet has implanted some kind of message in his head. So Scott, they say that Scott owes him, which he does. And I love the shrinking and the growing. I gushed about it in the first Ant-Man. I still love it. The tiny car, the large car, the big building, the little building. The building shrinks. Come on. But as they're leaving, some ghost-like figure is watching them, pun intended. So Hope goes to see Birch, who calls her Susan. He's a black market tech dealer who owns a kind of a shady looking restaurant, not gonna lie, looks way too clean. Just kidding, but it does look kind of like obnoxiously overpriced. So they said that quantum energy is apparently like gold. How could it possibly be gold when literally nobody really knows about it? But sure. So he wants the tech so that he can sell it. Hope says no, she doesn't get the part. Sonny wants their tech. And Hope comes back with wings in her fancy schmancy little wasp suit. Hope kicks butt. I love the, as always, I love the shrinking and size changing fights, because, you know, there's like a moment where like Hope is trying to avoid a hammer. Somebody gets hit with like a vegetable that grows or something. Like, it's really funny.
The salt shaker is the best part.
Yeah, sorry, the salt shaker. So Hope has like these little mini discs that help grow and shrink stuff, right?
Which we saw in the previous Ant-Man.
Right, and so Hope uses it to stop one of the guys from running away, and she just makes this giant salt shaker, and the guy just like runs right into it. It was really funny. So she takes the part, says, Sonny says he's not dead, and then this ghost-like person shows up, And she kind of walks through hope. Pym has a new suit for Scott, but it's got some bugs still. Pym is in trouble because Ghost wants the lab. But then we go to XCon Security, a safe place. We see that Scott doesn't get a desk because he's been on house arrest. He got the rejected desk.
He got a play school table.
Yeah. You weren't here when they were choosing desks, Scotty. Like, life's hard. So Ghost, as we find out, can walk through walls. Okay. There's a moment here that I have a very big gripe with this movie for. The Baba Yaga. I have no idea who wrote this shit, but they should be punished. Baba Yaga is a Russian Slavic folktale about a witch-ish person that lives in a house on chicken legs. She doesn't walk through walls. She eats children. I don't know, like, where did they get this idea? There are, like, so many other myths you could have chosen. Like, what the hell? Where did this come from? Like, she's not always necessarily a bad guy character. If you want my recommendations of Baba Yaga cartoons, you can message me on my social media. I have a ton of recommendations. But Baba Yaga is not a ghost. She doesn't walk through walls, okay? That is the point of this. All right. So, his ghost takes the lab, so they need a way to find the lab. So they need like a quantum spectrometer, so they go to Bill Foster. Bill Foster, fun fact, was a character named Goliath, who gets killed by Robothor in Civil War. This is why the movie's better than the comic in this case. So Ghost has like this chamber thing that is keeping her stable. They go to what is 100% a UC California school. My guess is UC San Francisco or UCSD.
It'd probably be San Francisco.
Yeah, a lot UCSF of it's based there. Yeah. Or San Francisco State or something. They go in disguise. A hat and sunglasses is a great disguise. And of course, I'm sure nobody will ever find them or recognize them. But there's an interesting note here that says Scott grumbles about that wearing a hat and sunglasses does not conceal your identity. And this has been a running joke among fans, and several MCU characters have used the technique, including Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, Black Widow, Winter Soldier, Scarlet Witch, and Kurian Falcon. It is also a common joke among DC fans in regard to Clark Kent and glasses. So that's an interesting note here because nobody clearly recognized Steve Rogers at a mall. He didn't even wear sunglasses. They were just regular glasses. Like, all right, fine. Some people are blind, have face blindness and whatnot. So shockingly enough, Bill Foster hates Hank Pym. Who doesn't hate Hank Pym? Except like Scott.
Instead, he's hated by Hank.
Yeah, well. Apparently he was part of this project called Goliath, and he made it to 21 feet, and Scott's like, well, he's like, what? And Bill's like, so what was your height? He's like, no, it's like, no really, 65. He goes, whoa. And Hank, and Hope is just sitting there like, can we stop comparing sizes? Bill Foster's interesting, but then we find out the FBI has arrived. They need something to track the suit, and they need something called a diffraction, which is an irregulator. But Hank says that he eliminated diffractors when he upgraded the suit. All right. So the Federal Bureau of Annoyance talks to Foster, and he actually covers for them, which is weird because he really doesn't need to. There's absolutely no reason to cover for Hank. So why does he tell them in what is a half-truth that he hates Hank's guts and Hank hates him and that they never get along, yada yada? What possible could this lead to? All right. So they need an older, so Hank and the gang need an older suit. And apparently Scott mailed the suit before he was arrested. Not quite sure how that happened, but all right. Scott, so the suit was sent by mail and is in a safe place. So they go back to his house, and meanwhile, an aunt has replaced Scott. So there's an aunt that is, like, eating cereal in front of the television and taking bubble baths and playing the drums on Guitar Hero. Like, it's hilarious.
It freaks Luis out, too.
Yes, it does. He's like, Scotty? So as it turns out, Cassie has the suit, which is very cleverly hidden inside the world's greatest grandma trophy. Scott really does love that trophy. Cassie gave it to him. So they have to go to school. And so they get to school. But because Scott is wearing a new suit, the regulator isn't quite... Meh. So there's a moment where he just like shrinks to when he doesn't need to or grows really fast. And then he just becomes like kindergarten-sized, which was really funny. And then as they go, he like tries to open to get to the like to open the door or something, or tries to get to the backpack, and he's like jumping up or something and hopes like if Cap could see you now. Hope is really angry that he didn't take her with him, like really. So they get the suit, everything's fine. They find the lab, they find the building, but then they get captured. We find out that this girl named Ava is the ghost, and she needs what is inside Scott's head. And she says that she's another casualty of Pym. I guess Ava's dad worked for Hank. He had some ideas, got fired, tried to replicate the experiments, blah, 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 blah. There was an explosion. It left Ava in, like, a physically disassociative state where she's out of sync with, like, our vibrations or whatever. And she needs, like, quantum healing particles in order to be whole. Let's see. She gets cut. She got weaponized by S.H.I.E.L.D. because, as we know, S.H.I.E.L.D. is Hydra. In S.H.I.E.L.D.'s collapse, Foster found her and took her in. And Pym, there's a couple of funny things here.
Like, that's because the two of them had always had a history with each other.
Yes. Because he tried to help her. So Pym, there's a cute moment where like they're tied up and like Cassie calls because she needs her like soccer cleats, which are at Scott's house. And Scott's obviously not home. So you see Maggie and Paxton like, can you just like move the camera on so I can see? And Scott's like, I'm a little tied up right now. Like, okay, just call us back later. Then Pym fakes a heart attack. The Altoid tin is actually full of ants. We actually see it earlier. When Hope goes in to talk to Birch, Scott sees the Altoids. He's like, can I have one? And Hank just looks at him like, no. So Luis calls Scott for help. And before he tells him where to go to meet him because Scott can't leave. And then Sunny arrives before Luis can leave. He gets injected with totally not true serum. And of course, in typical Luis fashion, he kind of gives us a summary of basically everything that happened in the previous film, which was really funny, as always.
I swear, there is actual footage of Luis doing the entire MCU up to Endgame.
I need that.
Like, we all need that. And it's just a shame that Disney decided to do the really dumb decision to do a very limited full Infinity Saga Blu-ray set and made it 4K only. For shame. Yeah. You need to put the Infinity Saga out for everyone to buy. With Luis giving us the entire run through of the MCU.
Fact. So, Ghost...
You do realize that's going to be a movie within itself, right?
Yes. Because the entire summary of the Marvel Cinematic Universe will be probably at least like a bajillion hours long. I mean, look at how long it takes us to talk about one movie.
Yep. The entire MCU, the entire Infinity Saga, all three phases, 3,000 minutes.
See, there you go. So, Ghost, meanwhile, I guess, went to Luis And as, you know, Luis is talking about all of this, Ghost just like pops out of nowhere and scares the bejesus out of everybody. It was great. Let's see. So Sonny doesn't really get much out of him, but Birch calls the feds because he has an inside man. So Hank powers up the machine. Scott gets possessed by Janet. Oh, my Lord. Give Paul Rudd an Oscar. That was perfection. I did not see Scott Lang. I genuinely saw Michelle Pfeiffer. Like, that was amazing. What they often do in with scenes like this, they'll have the actual actor that person is pretending to be do the scene once, and then the other actor comes in to copy it in some way. And when it works beautifully. It's one of my favorite tropes because it's such a fun thing to see actors do, because they're basically pretending to be a character who's possessed by another character. If anybody's seen the show Grimm has a really good episode in season 6 with that. That is amazing. So check that out. Anyway, so Scott being Janet is amazing. The bad guys are approaching. Scott is basically an antenna. And Janet has a plan. And she tells them that there's like a specific location they have to get to. And it's just one shot to get Janet back. So Hope's going to go in. But Louise, they have to go. And Scott's in trouble. So Maggie, Cassie, and Paxton come to get Cassie's shoes. Like I said, Cassie's the smartest person in the room, so she goes upstairs and sees the ant in the bathtub. She knows exactly what's going on. Give this 8-year-old a present. Cassie covers for Scott until he can get there. And she tells the FBI guy, like, he's really sick. He puked, like, everywhere. And Cassie's just such a pleasure. So she covers for Scott, then he shows up, and the FBI surrounds Hope and Hank meanwhile. And the agent, whose name still escapes me, was basically like, oh gosh, Scotty, I'm so sorry to have doubted you. And I like the actor who plays the FBI guy. So
I'm looking it up right now.
Thank you. So Hope's being a badass. Oh no, I'm sorry, rewind. There's a sweet moment after all of this, because the lab gets taken by Ghost, the FBI surrounds Hank and Hope, but Cassie has a really sweet moment with her father. She basically says that she knows he's being Ant-Man again, and she doesn't hate him for it, and he's like, I'm really sorry I let you down. She's like, you didn't let me down. And she wants to be her dad's partner. Cassie becomes her dad's partner in the comics!
The FBI agent is Jimmy Woo, played by Randall Park.
Oh, it was Agent Woo. Okay.
Good actor, too.
He is a good actor. So, back to Cassie. I said this again. I'm going to say it again. So, in the comics, Cassie Lang becomes her own size-changing superhero named Stature of the Young Avengers, which is coming. It's coming. God help us all. It's coming. But Cassie tells him that, so Scott tells her that, like, you know, if he let her be his partner, he wouldn't be a very good dad. She's like, well, I'm glad you have Hope watching your back. So let's see. Hope decides that they're going to blow up the wall, but then Scott comes to the rescue and gets her suit, and then gives Hank an FBI agent disguise. He just looks like somebody's grandpa decided to play FBI agent for a day. But they managed to get out, and Hank is a smart guy, so he put a new tracker on the lab. Ava and Bill are trying to launch the quantum tunnel. Hank's going to get Janet back while Scott and Hope protect the tunnel. So Hank goes in. Luis is there, and he wants a cool suit. But there's, of course, car chases. So Foster's powers up the tunnel. The ants stop him, and they're a distraction. Hank has the suit. Hank suits up and promises to help Ava when he gets back. And Bill's like, okay, fine, that works. Ghost fights with Scott, and Scott has some tells everybody that he has some ghost problems. Lab gets shrunk, and they take it. So Sonny arrives, because he's not done, and he wants to take the lab. So this is where the car chase ensues. And it's kind of brilliant, but also kind of dumb in a way. So they have a very specific location that they need to get to, right? Why not just shrink down, right? Hide under a car until everybody's gone, resize up, and then drive in the opposite direction.
Not because, to say that the... Because we need that epic car chase scene.
Fine. Fine. It was epic, and I did enjoy it. So Hank's in some trouble, lost signal. We have some cool, like, creatures and stuff, which are actually biologically real. They're found in, like, fossilized water or something on Mars. The giant Pez dispenser was a nice touch because we got to keep the nerd engine running. But Scott's regulator malfunctions again. Also Scott goes giant because Ghost is in like a truck, or one of the bad guys is in the truck. Hope gets the lab and Scott's regulator malfunctions. So he gets kind of slightly larger than the truck and he uses it as a freaking scooter. That is awesome.
But what's great about this scene is, too, is that as this is happening and he's using it as a scooter, he literally goes by a coffee shop and everyone's just like...
minding their own business.
Just another day. Type it away. Read him a book.
So, let's see. Hank made it. Luis has the remote. And so he gets the car, the regular van gets damaged. And Hank's like, just open the Hot Wheels box.
No, it wasn't Hank. It was
Scott. Scott tells them to
because
open
Hank
the
is still in the quantum realm. Yeah.
So Luis pulls out like the most badass looking car. He with the cool things and everything. So he's
fire
enjoying
decals.
It. Okay, I have to ask a question then.
No.
Are the cars Hot Wheel cars that can be actually ridden? Does this mean if we make the Hot Wheel cars, like we blow them up to regular size,
no,
we can drive them?
No.
Or did they just? Did Hank just buy all of these cars, modify them, put them in cool colors, and then shrink them? Or I guess he unshrunk them, did all the detail, then reshrunk them?
These are
the questions I have.
I would probably go with the first one where he bought the cars and then shrunk them.
But they're so colorful. Did he customize all the detail? Okay. You know, we're just going to let it go. Let's see.
I mean, the guy was running his own company and was making bank. I mean, the guy had enough capital to do it. So that doesn't mean he still ends up making money.
So Luis gets to like play around with the size changing switch on every car, which is kind of fun. Hope comes to the rescue. Scott goes after the lab. Birch gets a boat and he has the lab. And he goes on a whale watching tour. And then it's really funny. Scott goes giant, right? And he goes after the boat. And there's this guy who's narrating, like, welcome to the whale watching tour. It might be, or, oh my gosh, I've never seen a whale. So we're like, that's not a whale. That's Scott Lang. So Scott manages to get the lab back. Hank has a flashback / a hallucination. He finds Janet. Scott's too big and begins to pass out. He falls into the water. Hope saves him. Louise tries to get the lab to safety, but Ghost gets the lab. There's a lot of, like, who has the lab game going on here. And Ghost, I understand Ghost is kind of dying, but she just, like, makes the lab grow in the middle of a pier. Like, shrink, like, crushing everything inside. I sure hope nobody got hurt. And just as she makes it grow, so Hank and Janet can now return because they couldn't return until the lab was right size up again. Hope saves Scott and kisses him. Luis and Birch and the other ex-cons. Luis and the other ex-cons find Birch and they inject them all with true serum, which was funny. Biz shows up for Ava. She's grangry. There's a fight. But when, like, there's a fun moment where they stop Bill from powering up the machine so that Hank can go and get Janet. And the ants are like, he's controlling the ants and they're just like shuffling Bill out of the way. It was great. Anyway, so Hank and Janet come back. There's a really sweet reunion. Janet helps Ava with the healing particles of the quantum whatever, and it seems to have healed her potentially.
It was like a temporary fix.
Yes, it was. So the cops show up. And Birch and the other guys are like, yeah, so we're bad guys. We were trying to steal from them. These guys are innocent. There's a lot of health code violations in my restaurant. Shocker. And then, but Scott still has to go back.
Well, before that, before that, you have the one guy who injected the truth serum in Louise and goes,
this oh, is man, truth serum.
It is truth serum. You can't forget the best part of that little trope.
So anyway, Scott's house arrest is up. So he has to go back home so that he can, you know, get off house arrest and not spend 20 years in jail. So they use there's a lot of mentions of Scott and this close-up magic thing. And so the part of a good trick is misdirection. The suit is the misdirection. So they leave the suit kind of giant-sized while Scott is running away in his underwear. And he makes it back home, and Bill sticks with Ava. So the FBI arrives to Scott's house. He's playing the drums. Everything's good. The IFB, he and the FBI agent have an awkward "I'll be seeing you" kind of moment. He picks up Cassie from home.
Hey, no, wait. It wasn't just one of these "I'll see you later." It's like, you want to go out for dinner or something? Yeah. You want to go out on a date?
Agent Wu legit has a crush on Scott, and you cannot convince me otherwise.
I mean, look at Paul Rudd. He doesn't age.
This is fact. So the ex-cons get a boost in business, and it's thriving. The house is safe. Hank apparently just decides that at the beach, you know, I hope the, like, and just, like, makes the house big again, which was funny.
But apparently he has a carousel of houses, too.
Are you surprised?
Because, the house that he specifically put up was a beach house.
Well, he put it on the beach, but it's the same house from the first movie.
Yeah. But he still had a carousel of houses.
Anyway, so Cassie, he goes to pick up Cassie, and it's just fun moment of Maggie and Paxton just hugging him. This is how you healthy relationship with your ex. Anyway, so the final scene is Cassie, Hope, and Scott in a shrunk car watching a movie on a cell phone. And Cassie says that she wants to help people. Cassie! I can't wait till she puts the suit on. Anyway, she better get superpowers instead of just the suit, just saying. But anyway. So let's talk about the after credit scene. It's Louise's original van from the first movie, complete with the original honking horn. Scott is going to get some healing particles for their ghost friend, meaning that what Janet did to Ava is only a temporary fix. So Janet tells him to stay away from a few things and not to get sucked into a time vortex. So Scott goes in and everyone else gets dusted.
And this is why this movie should have happened before Endgame. It would have made a lot more sense.
Agreed.
And we'll get to it more when we do Captain Marvel next week, because yeah, I know, blah, 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 that movie. But like, it's because of those end scenes. You have the very last scene in Infinity War, the very last scene that you see, being the Avengers who are left over looking at this pager that Fury used.
Well, actually, they're not looking at the pager. We're looking at the
pager. Oh, yeah, we're looking at the pager, yeah. But then you have the end credit scene, yes, where Captain Marvel shows up. But the thing is, though, is that if you look at Endgame, it starts with Hawkeye's family getting dusted. It would have made more sense to have the dusting of Hank, Janet, and Hope go right into the dusting of Hawkeye's family.
I agree with that completely. But the thing is that would have been the second after credit scene. But the second after credit scene we actually get is just the end.
With all the TVs and radios going buzzing.
Yeah, because there's broadcast issues because those people have disappeared. So, all right, let's talk about this. Cassie Lang is a national treasure, damn it. The humor.
Just go right for the jugular. This.
Yes, fight me. Cassie Lang is a treasure. It's a fun movie, especially after like the depression you feel after Infinity War, knowing all your favorite characters have just been dusted. Well, not all of them, but most of them. And this after credit scene is just like, and I remember watching this movie. I'm like, huh, we made it through this entire movie without mentioning Infinity War. Oh, okay. Now, Agent Wu is kind of fun. Like, he's not really a bad guy, but he's also like semi annoying. But the question is he annoying because he's kind of awkward, or is he annoying just because he's an FBI agent? And there's a funny moment where like Maggie's sitting on the couch and she's like, makes fun of the, what does the FBI stand for? Like, I don't remember exactly what she says, but so I wish her and Paxton have had a little bit more time in this movie, but I understand this wasn't necessary. So, because the first movie was a lot about, you know, father-daughter relationships. This movie, I think, has more of, like, a redemption theme film, but it's also about, like, learning to trust people and how people surprise you and how nothing is as it seems. And I would say that the overarching theme isn't quite as evident in this film as it was in the first one, but I still really loved this movie. I had a lot of fun in this movie. Lawrence Fishburne was a delight as Bill Foster.
And the young Bill Foster was actually played by his son, Langston. Yep.
Yes, he was.
Lawrence Fishburne was the first actor to make the jump from DC over to Marvel, where Zachary Levi would actually make the jump from Marvel to DC.
I forgot. He played, what's his face? The editor of the Daily Bugle, right?
Yep, the Daily Planet.
In whatever.
And Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice.
Let's see.
And he actually did a great job with that character, too.
He did. Let's see. So the laboratory incorporated elements of various scales and was obviously enhanced when at various scales. Examples include an enormous battery, an electric guitar volume knob, and the like. With most everything else at human scale. The wheels and tote handles were... Okay, that's interesting. For the role of Janet Van Dyne, Evangeline Lilly, Janet's daughter Hope, had Michelle Pfeiffer on her wish list to play Janet, and Michael Douglas had expressed the desire to have his actual wife, Catherine Zeta-Jones, play Janet.
Michelle Pfeiffer is a better actress than Catherine Zeta-Jones.
So, yes, but... I like Catherine Zeta-Jones a lot. I actually think she looks more like Janet than Michelle Pfeiffer. And it actually would have made sense if Janet didn't age in the quantum realm. But this is not to harp on Michelle Pfeiffer. I actually really like her. I like what she did with the role. I hope we get to see a little bit more of her in the third Ant-Man, whatever the plot of that one will be. There's so many rumors, I don't even know what to trust. And the answer is don't trust any rumors because they are wrong. It is the 20th film to be released by Marvel Studios for the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yep.
The soundtrack is great for this movie, just like in the other one, especially that song like Get Happy that plays. This is actually interesting because Peyton Reed stated that in a recent interview that he went back and rewatched all of Michelle Pfeiffer's past movies prior to working with her. And Peyton Reed promised Michael Douglas that he wouldn't just be a walking exposition machine this time. He definitely had more to do. We got to see a little bit more of Hank's kind of like, we saw a little bit more of the guilt that he feels. We also see more of his mistakes. And, you know, in the last movie, he wasn't quite as likable as I think he was in this movie.
Well, and that was kind of the part of the first one, though. He wasn't supposed to be the most likable character.
It's called growth.
Yeah. And, like, technically him starting off in this one, you didn't really like Hope or Hank going much in the beginning of this one either. Because it's like, well, it's the whole they hate Scott thing. And how they're kind of mean to him. But then, like, as time goes on, they go, all right, he really is on our side. He is trying to help.
Yeah. And what's actually really cool is Peyton Reed apparently, even during the first Ant-Man movie, had envisioned Michelle Pfeiffer playing this role. So it's actually pretty awesome. And I like when a plan comes together, you know?
I think at this point, if Disney or Marvel call... You're accepting the role pretty much at this point. If they think you're right for the role, you're accepting the role.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't think Marvel has ever had a bad casting. for a main character that I can think of. Like, there's maybe people that are like, oh, maybe that wasn't the right role. But when you actually see the movie, you can't really argue that that person wasn't amazing in the role that they were in, except maybe Tilda Swinton is the ancient one.
Yeah,
you were gonna say chosen one.
Anakin, you are the chosen one.
And that, and the choice itself has nothing to do with Tilda Swinton, obviously. It has nothing to do with Tilda herself or her acting skills. And you and I talked about this when we did the Doctor Strange review. So, by and large, Marvel, you are doing pretty damn well with casting. I hope you remember to find a Jewish actor for Moon Knight. And I hope when the X-Men are brought into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Kitty Pryde's Judaism won't just be forgotten on somebody else's shelf. But anyway, oh my gosh, we are almost done with all of the currently released MCU films. This is incredible.
So just to put this out there, we talked about the thing about Fishburne and his son, which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I don't think there was that many other major notes except for the fact that Paul Rudd just doesn't age for somebody who's 50 years old.
Yeah, that's
true. Or no, 51 years old.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
So, Mike, how did this movie do? How was this rated?
The film clocked in at 1 hour and 58 minutes. With an IMDb score of a 7.1 out of 10.
How does that rank with the other MCU films?
With Ant-Man 1, Ant-Man 1 had a 7.3. Spider-Man Homecoming had a 7.4. Doctor Strange was a 7.5. Black Panther was a 7.3.
So that's not too bad, considering it's a sequel. So I enjoyed the movie. It was fun. This is not a movie where you have to think critically. That's for sure. That's what Civil War was for. But it was a lot of fun. And I enjoyed it. Go watch it.
Yes. Well, go watch it anyways, because it makes sense in the in Endgame. So watch it anyways.
Yep.
So with that, I will start. You will close. So you can find me on the social medias at the Lindenbaum 75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, txhthockey.com, and then for the show /nerdy-notions.
And of course, to my loyal subjects, I can be found at geekgirl101.tumblr.com. I just finished answering a whole slew of questions about my favorite superhero ever. And of course, Geeky Captain on Instagram. If people think I should make a Twitter, let me know. I don't care. And with that, thank you so much for listening. And please join us next time as we blast off into outer space, only to come back down to Earth with one of the most annoying characters of the entire comic book history of Marvel, Carol Danvers.